Welcome to the Healthy Skin Show with Jennifer Fugo, where we're flipping everything you've been told about your chronic skin issues upside down and connecting you with alternative solutions your dermatologist never told you about.
Welcome back to episode number 316 of the Healthy Skin Show. In today's episode, we are going to discuss the intimate relationship between food elimination diets, the way that foods are oftentimes discussed on social media, and how this can all create essentially a trauma response, so that when you think about potentially reintroducing a food, there is so much fear that you are up against in your mind that it makes it very difficult to separate what is best for your health, whether something is truly toxic or inflammatory, or whether it's simply the way your brain has been wired due to so much of these outside influences. And I will acknowledge that some of us have had admittedly bad reactions to food in the past, and that can linger and last with you for a really long time. So if you've been considering reintroducing foods and expanding your diet, this conversation is for you. If you've also found some of the ways in which diet is talked about online to be kind of, for a lack of better words, culty, this conversation is for you. Because my guest today deeply understands what it's like to have to remove food from her diet, and she also intimately understands the whole complex framework that is trauma and that trauma response in the body. My guest who's back on the show with us is Dr. Mary Catherine McDonald, who is a research professor and life coach who specializes in the psychology of trauma, stress, and resilience. And she is the author of the book that I would give 5 stars to across the board called Unbroken: The Trauma Response is Never Wrong. It was a fascinating read, and I recommend it to many of my clients because you can tell from reading the book just how passionate Mary Catherine, or MC as she likes to be called, is about destigmatizing trauma, stress, and mental health issues. So without further ado, let's dive into today's conversation. Welcome back to the show, Mary Catherine. I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me back. I so enjoyed our first conversation and I can't wait to dive in today.
I know. Well, I will say that as you know, and everybody who listened to our previous episode, I absolutely loved your book. And
oh, thank you.
You know, you were the person that I thought of when, you know, this topic of elimination diets and this really negative reaction that some people can have as a result of doing them. I thought you would be a good person to talk about this because I do think that there is some potential trauma that can result. Now, I want to be very clear. I'm not anti-elimination diet. There's a time and a place for them. And there's also medically necessary eliminations. And I want to say that right up front. So what we're not talking about is in any way, shape or form suggesting that anyone here reintroduce an IgE allergen that you actually react to, or gluten if you have celiac disease. So I just want to say that up front. But in general, we're talking about the way that having to eliminate food can interact with the way you think about things and the way you relate to food. And so, okay, I think the best question to start off with here is, do you think that there could be almost like a trauma response when you potentially eliminate food, any particular food from your diet, whether it's medically necessary or it's maybe recommended by a practitioner, or even like self-initiated because you read about it in a book or a Facebook group? Do you think it's possible that there is a trauma response there?
100% possible. I think, again, so one of the things that I was aiming to do with the book Unbroken was to kind of redefine trauma away from this classical definition where we base the definition on trauma on a list of events. And we say these 4 events are potentially traumatic and anything else is not. Under my definition of trauma, we don't look at the type of event as being the thing that determines whether or not something was traumatic. We look at the way that that experience was, left traces in the person's lives. And so the definition that I use is, you know, anytime you have an unbearable emotional experience that lacks a relational home, you have a potential for trauma. And I think that having to go on an elimination diet, or feeling like you have to go on an elimination diet because of something you've seen or feel like you're trying to figure out, can absolutely be an overwhelming, unbearably, you know, overwhelming emotional experience. Because when we look at the areas of our lives that are foundational, I mean, nutrition and being able to eat freely is one of those areas. And so when you start having to cut things out or feeling like you have to cut things out, you've automatically got overwhelm. And then, you know, when you feel like you can't talk to anyone about it, you have a lack of a relational home, or you try to talk to people about it and they don't understand, it can absolutely be a trauma for sure. And I think the other thing is that a lot of the reason that people go on elimination diets is because there's some sort of thing going on with them that doesn't make sense. And so that can be experienced as like a body betrayal. I'm trying to eat, I'm trying to do this very normal thing, and my body is betraying me. And that is also potentially traumatic. And so I think, and then to your point about like coming back in and trying to reintroduce things and not being able to is a whole separate potential trauma. So I think there's a lot here that's potentially traumatic for sure.
And you're not just looking at this as a mental health professional, like yes. You have experience. I think people would love to know why you personally understand this.
Yes. So there's two things. I have celiac disease and I was diagnosed. I had symptoms when I was a kid, but I wasn't diagnosed until 2006. So I was 24. That is a tricky thing. And has become a lot easier in some ways and then also trickier in other ways. So we can maybe dive into that if you want. And then I also struggle with migraine. And I had, I really was running into a wall with medications not working, medications having horrific side effects, and then also not working. And I went on an elimination diet that helped tremendously and made me absolutely terrified of food. And so I went through decades of life, and I'm only just kind of coming out of this now. It's going to sound silly, but I reintroduced apples in the fall. I hadn't had an apple in 15 years. Not actually a trigger for me, but I had stayed away, and staying away from apples is hard because apple cider vinegar, apple sauce, apple is in a lot of stuff. And so I'm only just kind of starting to come out of that now. And it's still really tricky because for me there, you know, going back to this idea of a trauma response, whenever I would eat, I would panic because my brain started to associate food with pain and distress. And so anytime I ate, it was like, what's going to happen to me? And I lived in that for a long, long, long time.
And I can relate to that as well, because many of my listeners know I stopped eating chicken eggs back in 2008, along with gluten and dairy, but chicken eggs caused a severe stomach pain that was so bad that I thought that I was having a heart attack. And I was about to drive myself to the hospital. I became violently ill. I do not, by the way, have an IgE allergy to it. It was just a severe sensitivity. But that experience of becoming so, like, again, to your point, pain, so much excruciating pain that I became afraid to eat them again. And it wasn't until I think like 2015, 2016, I ran into Dr. Terry Walls and I had mentioned this to her. And she's like, oh, you should try duck eggs. It took me I think it almost took until 2020 or 2021 until I finally worked up the courage to try duck eggs. And I not only spent days mulling over how I was going to do this, and was there a day where I could be violently ill and sick and it wouldn't be too bad? Like I mentally prepared myself for this horrific thing that never happened. I was completely fine and it was such a blessing. And then trying to reintroduce chicken eggs this past year was the same thing. And I'm actually okay with them now. Thank goodness, made breakfast so much easier and life so much easier. But I do understand that the fear can become so real and paralyzing.
Mm-hmm. And think about that as an adaptation, right? So the trauma response is a set of adaptive responses that we have to danger. And so your nervous system is doing what it thinks is helpful by saying, no, we learned that chicken eggs are literal poison. And so when it comes to reintroducing them, you have to work against the trauma response that was established by that traumatic event that you had where you thought you were dying. You know, and that's that requires a lot of time and preparation because you're working against your biology and your kind of foundational wiring.
And do you think too, even in someone who maybe didn't react to the food, but it's been repeated, like they've read, for example, eggs are a trigger for eczema, so they're bad for you. And you read this over and over and over again, and you take them out, and then you come to believe and think that it's bad. Mm-hmm. Is that a similar response that it's trying to, it is protective, I suppose.
Right. But not in a like a rational way. Yes. Because I think the part of the brain that's afraid is not rational. So it's going to draw connections that don't, that defy rationality sometimes. And so when you plant that thought that like, I'd never heard that before, that eggs, you know, cause eczema, I've never heard that. It's funny. And then you kind of reiterate that and reiterate that and reiterate that. What you're essentially doing is conditioning fear into your system. And we can condition fear about anything. You can condition fear about, I mean, this is kind of where phobias come from, or one of the theories anyway. You can condition yourself to believe that anything is potentially threatening. And then your system over time, once that fear has been conditioned, is going to have an automatic response.
It's almost like you could not even eat that food.
Right.
But the thought of it could elicit that type of response.
That type of response. And you might actually have a physical reaction to it. So you might feel like even if you've never eaten something before, you could, if you knowingly eat it, let's say eggs, it's hard to imagine you'd never eat eggs, but you've kind of associated that this is going to cause pain or a problem. And you eat it, you can actually feel sick or even kind of make yourself sick because, and it's not that you're creating that symptom, it's that the fear is creating a stress response, which is creating that symptom. And so I think there's another area where things get really complicated here, which is that we almost create like noise in the system because we then have reactions to food that come from fear instead of a true allergy or sensitivity. And so then that reinforces the fear and then makes that bond even stronger in the system. You know what I mean?
And, you know, one other point to this that I think is interesting is the idea that, well, I worry that for those who've had a history of eating disorders, there seems to be a slippery slope here with elimination diets. And I recognize this may not be your area of expertise, but do you have any thoughts for somebody who's listening to this who maybe had, right? So something in the past, an eating disorder in the past where they feel that they're okay now and they've recovered from it. Or maybe somebody who is actually dealing with an active eating disorder. Do you just think from, like, what's your thoughts on that from a sort of mental and emotional health standpoint for somebody in that boat, or those, maybe they're two separate camps, of going down this road of starting to eliminate foods, especially on their own?
Yeah. I mean, absolutely to your point about, you know, when you do it alone, I think that can be really tricky because, you know, again, what you're doing in, and again, as you said, I'm not an expert here, but I think just from my perspective, you're creating a fear response, you're conditioning a fear into the system, and you're labeling sometimes an entire food group as quote unquote bad or evil or problematic or dangerous, and your system is listening. And so then you get stuck because let's say you recognize, you know, for me, the silly example of the apple, like, okay, I want to bring this back in because it would make my life so much easier in so many ways. And then you have to like, kind of like walk yourself into that fear and face it over and over and over until the fear kind of gets desensitized. So you have that thing that can happen. And when that happens with entire food groups, like carbohydrates, all the while that you are going through that, you could potentially be having huge nutritional deficiencies that are impacting your brain function, your cardiovascular system, your intestinal, like the whole thing. And so I think there is a very slippery slope. And I think it can also very easily kind of lead into some of the problematic thinking that comes in with anxiety disorders and OCD, where again, you've labeled entire food groups as bad or wrong. And now when you have to face them, you are also then faced with kind of an outsized amount of anxiety. I think that we talk about eating disorders in terms of what we currently clinically define as eating disorders. And there, you know, there are a couple of categories there. But we also need to look at disordered eating in a broader kind of context. Like, you might not have a full-blown diagnosable eating disorder, but if your eating is disordered, what then are the repercussions of that emotionally and physically, you know? I think a lot of this behavior can be in the name of health and wellness, and what that's actually hiding is an eating disorder that someone hasn't actually recovered from, but they have tricked themselves into believing that they have recovered from, because what they're doing now is under the umbrella of health, you know?
Well, and it's also interesting, some of the terms you used, like, is this bad for you or toxic or inflammatory? And you see this with a lot of these, and all right, guys, you know, I'm like diet agnostic here, but there is some cultiness stuff that can happen with some of these diets that are being promoted online, like carnivore, plant-based. So please don't come for me. Like, there is some cultiness. I'm sorry. There just is. Yeah, yeah. And there's like a morality piece. Almost, it feels like almost like it's a morality thing. I don't know.
100%.
But it's interesting, the language that's used. And do you think that that's part of it, or that the language that, I just wonder if there's some things around language, if people could spot that, maybe instead of trying to look for like this idea of, like you said, the picture of health, being this picture of health, this ideal picture, all of a sudden you go, wait, maybe the way that this is being talked about is not, it's not necessarily balanced. I mean, like with carnivore, for example, it's like, oh, your oxalates are bad for you, and your, you know, all these plant foods have oxalates, and I don't know, like, we go down this like crazy rabbit hole of all these things of why plant foods are bad for you and toxic and poisonous. And then on the flip side, you go to plant-based, and we're like, there's all that morality around whether we kill animals and eat animals, all this stuff. And it just, at a certain point, I feel like people get emotionally lost in all of that language.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that, like, one of the things that I always watch out for, and this is true in any arena, but I think it's especially obvious in what we're talking about, is when people are reducing very complicated systems to really simplistic models. And so we say, you know, like we were talking before, oils are bad. Or, you know, like meat is bad, or these things are inflammatory, or this is toxic. The thing that kind of I always try to look for is, like, that's far too reductive, right? Oils are complex. There are some oils that can cause certain things and other oils that can cause other things. And some of them can be beneficial to, let's say, like your cholesterol. Some of them can be detrimental to your cholesterol. Like, it depends. And there's also not any kind of respect for, like, the bio-individuality aspect, where if you have a genetic high cholesterol, then this oil might be bad for you. But for someone who doesn't, it's going to be something different. You know, there's no sort of respect for the complexity. And then I think you're right. Like, when we get into this language of morality, right, this should be a space where morality comes up in certain ways, right? How are we treating the animals that we are butchering, for example? That's a question where we can ask morality. But whether a food is evil or not, like, that seems to me to be kind of fundamentally strange. I also think that it comes up in the fact that we are obsessed with elimination and rarely talk about additive changes. And so something I've been looking into just for my own health is, like, adding things for hormone support. Right, which is, you know, has nothing to do with eliminating entire food groups. But that's not as sexy. It's not as talked about on Instagram or social media, because it doesn't have this, like, veil of, you know, you're entering into this, like, good versus evil discussion. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I do. Just think it's interesting. Yeah.
And I think this is kind of goes to the point where we were talking off the air first about wellness influencers. And there really is a toxicity, unfortunately. Like, some people are like, why do you follow this person? And I'm like, well, I don't follow them because I agree with them. I need to know what they're saying, because people inevitably ask me, panic, in a total panic, about a particular video that they saw. And now they think that these things that they've been eating are going to kill them, poison them, whatever. And they're like, I can't drink this. I can't do that. I can't. And it becomes this state where you just don't feel safe at all. So do you find, just, you know, in your little camp, in being, right? Because you've got this like really interesting spot. And I think, like I've said it shared before, I think your approach to trauma was one of the most digestible approaches that I have ever found, because every other book I couldn't finish. So Unbroken is by far like probably one of the most recommended books I have given to clients, to colleagues, to friends. I have suggested it more than probably any other book because of how approachable it is. And here we are watching under the guise of health, which I think my opinion is it's promoting disordered eating, but it's like this toxic culture of wellness that we don't realize is actually making part of what's making people sick.
Yes. Yeah, totally. I think there's two things going on there. And thank you for your compliments about the book. The whole goal was accessibility. So I love to hear that it is digestible, because that was the goal. I think that one of the things that's really interesting. So there's a chapter in the book where I talk about referred pain, which is this strange phenomenon whereby sometimes you experience physical pain in an area that's not the source of the pain. So the classic example is like a toothache that's actually a heart attack. And so in some sense, you are having tooth pain, and that is true for you. But when you go to the dentist is going to say, no, it's you have to go to the emergency room. You're having a cardiovascular event. That is an area where we trust the doctor to tell us that the referred pain source is somewhere else. But I think in this area, when it comes to controlling and monitoring our own food and wellness, we are distrustful unless it already kind of jives with what we came in believing, if that makes sense. And so if you have this set of beliefs about foods that are toxic or inflammatory and then foods that are good, and then you go to the doctor and your doctor says, look, you've got a real nutritional deficiency. You need to start adding back in, you know, something that's on your toxic list. You are going to go find somebody on Instagram who disagrees with that doctor and then go with that, you know. And I think that's really problematic and scary. And I think what it reveals is the second thing, which is that whenever we see something like this happening, like across society, I think it's really interesting to think about why are we suddenly so obsessed with ingesting food, ingesting toxins? And I think, you know, on the heels of the pandemic, we are dealing with an incredible amount of unprocessed trauma. And I don't think this is the whole thing, but I think this is a layer that might explain what's going on. And the response to that is to overexert control. We are in a space of hypervigilance and panic that we haven't addressed. And so it feels very good to exert control over an area of your life and make it clean and make it good, because we've just been dealing with, you know, with infection, with germ, with poison. And so now it's like, okay, no, well, I don't know. I can't control the outside. I can't control whether there's going to be another pandemic or if COVID is still going on or if there's another wave or whatever, but I can control the cleanliness of my body. And so this sort of this paradigm of the like clean, perfect wellness guru can rise up out of that and start to look really attractive. Does that make sense at all?
It does. Well, I mean, this is another question towards that. Like, is it possible too that these types of messages could be almost addictive?
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. Yeah. And I think if you think about, you know, there's different theories about where eating disorders come from and how they crop up, but a lot of it is, or there's at least one theory that says that that it's a way to gain control over a world that feels outside of your control. And so I think that one of the things that's maybe driving us to wellness in this really singular reductive way is that we feel out of control. And so we get a huge like blast of dopamine when we feel like we have exerted control in a world that has just been revealed to us unequivocally as out of control. And so it's like, yeah, it can absolutely become addictive because you feel like you're doing something good and healthy and clean in a world that feels scary and awful and you know, threatening, you know?
And it also is in some regards, well, like, I think that's the one thing I learned from your book, right? That the trauma is well-meaning. It's meant to be protective.
Totally.
The response to it, I guess I should say. But in some regards, it can lead us astray.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's this like arc that we'd never talk about where, because we either talk about things being adaptive or maladaptive, but we don't talk about the arc that connects those two things, which is that often the fear response is adaptive. It is trying to protect you. So the kind of silly example that I always use is like, if you had a night with tequila that didn't end well, then your body, whenever you even smell tequila, is going to be like, that's poison. We are not ingesting that. If you try to ingest that, we're going to bring that right back up, you know? And so that's adaptive, right? Your body is trying to adapt to a poison. It's linked that taste with poison. And so it's going to try to get rid of it. But what is adaptive can over time become maladaptive if those signals are going off in the wrong places. And so the trauma response is fundamentally, foundationally adaptive. It's a set of responses that helps us stay alive. We need it. But sometimes over time, those responses are coming off, they're coming on too often, or they are kind of signaling at the wrong thing. So we have something benign coming in and we're labeling that as danger. And so adaptation can become maladaptive, but I think it's important to understand that it started out as adaptation, because then you can, you know, walk it back and be like, okay, what were we trying to accomplish with this adaptive move? How has it become maladaptive? And then how can we now figure something else out?
So if somebody's listening to this and they're like, yeah, I'm really afraid to eat these foods. I'm afraid to reintroduce certain foods. I've thought about it, but like I mentally just cannot get there. They're really struggling with food fear. Maybe they've got a history of an eating disorder. Deep, deep fear here. Or they're also consuming. I think we have to be careful what we surround ourselves with, what we consume. So what are some thoughts on your side of this camp on how can you begin to, I hate to say deal with this, but what are some things that somebody could start to do? Because I hate to see somebody who's literally whittled themselves down to five foods. And yes, everyone, this has happened. I have worked with multiple people in this camp who cannot reintroduce foods and have felt like they should have become healthier the more they restricted, and they're not, they're actually sicker. And there's so much fear in their way to reintroduce. And I'm not even talking trans fat here or McDonald's. We're talking blueberries, sweet apples, potatoes, right? Apples, eggs, like simple things that are natural. How do you begin to make peace with that?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a great question. The first thing that I want to say, I have a couple of ideas, but the first thing that I want to say is that I relate. So if you find yourself in that situation, I too have been in that situation, and I understand the compelling nature of that fear, and that there may be some amount of time that you have to stay in that space. And because, you know, having celiac and then also going on this elimination diet for migraine meant that, I couldn't eat with my family. I couldn't eat out. People didn't understand. There was a lot of shame. Incredible emotional response would happen when someone would judge what I was trying to do, or if I said, oh, I can't eat that because it has this ingredient, which is this, and that might be MSG or whatever. So it caused a lot of distress and noise around eating. And that's really painful and complicated and can make your life really small. And sometimes when you feed the system anxiety, it continues to reproduce anxiety. And so your life starts to get smaller and smaller. This happens with any trauma. There's a moment when the fear is relevant and important, and then there's a moment where we have to push against it. And I just want to say, like, I understand so deeply how hard it is to push against it, because you're walking into an area where you believe, correctly or incorrectly, that something bad is going to happen to you. And so to that point, I think that a relational home is really critical. So finding an accountability partner or a friend, or, you know, working with someone in the field, a nutritionist or somebody who can help you, who you feel really safe with, make a plan for, like, I had to have a whole plan when I introduced apples back in. And again, this sounds really silly, but it was like, okay, so we're going to try it. We're going to eat a quarter of an apple today, and we're going to see if anything bad happens. And if anything bad happens, we're going to wait 48 hours and we're going to eat a half an apple. And like, you know, you almost have to kind of treat yourself like a little kid and say, like, yes, the fear is here in the room. And instead of trying to quash it or smash it or shame it, we're going to say, okay, here, let's negotiate with it. You know, what can we do today? And then having an accountability partner to keep you going, because it's really easy to be like, okay, I ate the apple that time, I'm fine. And then never eat apples again for another 15 years. You know what I mean? And so like being like, no, if you're going to add something back in, you have to add it back in. And here's what that looks like. And having a relational home, a place where someone can help you bear that overwhelm, is incredibly helpful, because they are outside of your fear brain that is telling you that you're about to ingest poison. And they can also help you make a plan for, okay, if you don't feel well, if you're violently ill, here's the plan. Here's what we're going to do to make that okay, you know? And then there's this concept in somatic experiencing therapy, which is a modality founded by Peter Levine, who wrote Waking the Tiger, which is a great book on trauma, about titration, which is that you, instead of trying to blast through the pain or the fear, you kind of walk into it and then you walk back out. So similar back to the apple example, you eat a quarter of an apple, then you walk back out for 2 days. Then you try half an apple, then you walk back out. Titration is really important because you need to sort of like make your system understand that what you're doing actually is safe and that you're listening to it. Because when you understand that you're working against your trauma response, which is trying to protect you, you have to kind of like, you know, titrate in and out. And then the last thing is that for some people, there's going to be a foundational trauma that started this whole, you know, system running. And so for me, like having the experience of that incredible crushing pain of migraine or having all these physical symptoms from having celiac disease, those are real things that have to be dealt with, regardless of what I choose to eat or not eat. And so I think finding a place, whether that's a therapist or a support group or a set of friends who has a similar struggle to you, an online forum, people who can help you kind of sort through what that foundational trauma is, because you have to get to the source of the symptom if you really want the thing to go away. Otherwise, it's just going to pop up in another form.
And I think too, it can consume your life.
100%.
And yeah. Also too, I found that some individuals who have had to eliminate foods for medically necessary reasons, sometimes they house a lot of anger. This is not everyone, but some people do, because they are upset about how other people treat their condition, how serious some people take it and others don't. And it's like everything becomes this like affront. And that also is, I think, part of this. I think I can relate to that as well, and being angry that people wouldn't take me seriously. I'm sure you can relate to that.
Totally, yeah.
But that's our responsibility mm-hmm. to deal with that, because mm-hmm. you can't, I mean, I don't know if maybe that's sort of the last thing is like, is it your responsibility to deal with these things, especially in how other people respond to what you are going through with your diet or an elimination mm-hmm. diet or whatever is it also medically necessary in some instances?
Yeah. I think that's tricky, right? Like it's one of the things that makes food especially complicated is that it's not just for our own nourishment. It's also how we connect with other people. And so all of this sort of takes itself out on a stage where other people are going to be involved. And I think, you know, weaponizing your food stuff, I've seen that a lot, and making it someone else's problem or, you know, lashing out in anger because there's nothing at the office, you know, lunch that you can eat. The other people in the room, it's not their fault, nor is it their responsibility. And at the same time, I relate to that anger of like being like, you know, other people can eat anything they want. And I have to think about this all the time. And that can be really frustrating. But to your point, like, I think that's my issue. That's my resentment to sort out myself with my therapist. You know, that's not if you and I go out to lunch and you get to order like a burger with a bun and fries or something like that, and I'm like, oh, I would love that. It's not appropriate for me to take that out on you. That's my own thing. And I think the result of this, if you don't take responsibility of the part that's yours, is that you'll be isolated. And so then that's tricky because it's like you have this anger and the anger is well-founded and what are you going to do with it? Because if you lash out at the people around you, then you're going to be isolated. And I think some things are tricky.
They are. They totally are. Right? I feel like you and I could talk about this for hours because yeah. there's so much around this.
So many layers.
It's mm-hmm. like, right, we don't talk about politics, religion, and food.
And food, yeah. Yeah.
Food is a tricky thing. It's so, mm-hmm. in so many regards, there's so many foods now that are controversial, that don't make any sense, that shouldn't be. It's mm-hmm. like, it's wild. And I so appreciate not only the way you break these things down, but the way that you do so without judgment. And I just want to thank you for mm-hmm. that because I know so many listeners loved your episode that you were on before. So I'll make sure to link that up in the show notes for those of you who did not check that out. So if this is your first time, you got to go back and check the other because MC's book, Unbroken, The Trauma Response Is Never Wrong, was the only trauma book I've been able to finish. Cover to cover, did not cry, did not think it was impossible. I was able to finish on vacation, no less. It was not depressing. And I learned a lot about myself and my journey. And so, and it was so interesting that my therapist even read it at my recommendation.
Oh my gosh.
So I think I think that could be a really helpful tool for anyone who's on this journey to read that. Cause I don't think a lot of times we relate these emotions and this sort of like mental state that people get stuck in with trauma. But I do think that there's trauma there. And yes, at least by acknowledging it, it's mm-hmm. a start, right? That because yeah. we can't start addressing something. We can't start shifting in it until we're aware that it's even there.
Right.
So I love what you're doing. How can everybody find you and connect with you?
So it's really easy. I am mc.phd on Instagram and TikTok. And my website is alchemycoaching.life. And you can find Unbroken anywhere you buy books, Amazon, bookstores. It's even in the airport.
Awesome. Well, I hope that you will be back again because I feel like there's so many things we could talk about. Yes. And I just appreciate you so much for having this conversation.
Oh, thank you so much.
I hope that this conversation was as fascinating to you as it is me. I work in this place where client after client and community member after community member and Instagram follower after Instagram follower is constantly asking questions based around this concept that food is somehow killing us. And while this is such a nuanced conversation, the way in which it is perpetuated not only by wellness influencers, but also by our own lived experiences and potentially even by practitioners that we have worked with, has created this really tricky situation to navigate that reinforces the fear and the trauma that we have from eliminating foods or listening to messages repeatedly that reinforce the toxicity or inflammatory nature of food, pitting us against food, which really should be nourishment, which should be part of what draws us together as a community. And so I'm so grateful that MC was able to join us today, especially given that she understands what this is like. So if you love this conversation and you want to learn more, I put all the resources for you over in the show notes at skinterrupt.com/316. You can leave your questions, thoughts, and comments about this there so we can keep the conversation going. And then here's my ask. Make a point to share this episode with someone you know who could really benefit from this conversation. Make sure to rate and review The Healthy Skin Show if you haven't done so yet, and then hit that subscribe button so you never miss a weekly dose of inspiration, clinical research, alternative strategies, and conversations like this that help us better understand how to navigate this journey to rebuilding healthy skin. And then let's connect online. I'm at Jennifer Fugo. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I look forward to diving deeper with you in the next episode.